Good day, everybody. Welcome once again to This Week in Mormons. TWIM, your greatest source for Mormon news the world over.
This is weird!
It's true. I am your ghost host, Jeff.
Al.
Wasn't that the A-Team?
I just felt like I needed a little bit of an intro.
Was it? So. Did you see the A-Team movie? Because I did not.
I have not. I heard it was tremendous from children and terrible by Rotten Tomatoes.
So. Yeah. I did not see it. The summer movie season is dying on me now. So
Similar to G.I. Joe and other films of that nature. Stealth, perhaps.
Okay, G.I. Joe was amazing. I kid you not.
Okay, go ahead.
I forced someone many months ago to watch G.I. Joe with me.
A woman?
Yes. This was during the unemployment days. So I watched G.I. Joe during the daytime. And then at night, we went and saw 2012. So it was one day of terrible action movies. It was so good.
Bad Russian accents and cheesy effects.
You mean for 2012? Or?
Yeah.
2012 was awesome on so many preposterous levels. Oh, I loved it.
What do you mean? That's not preposterous.
And I don't even mean the general plot aside. I always look for the stupid stuff. Like they fly from Las Vegas, and they're supposed to refuel in Hawaii, but all of Hawaii is on fire. So they continue on, and they somehow make it to mainland China in an old Soviet propeller plane.
It's a hop, skip, and a jump, Jeff. That's only another 12 hours.
You know, they just take off from Vegas, mind you. So that tacks on an extra hour just to clear California. And
what would you do? Would you have landed in a burning Hawaii? No, you would have done the same thing and just flown with fake imaginary gas fumes.
I would have. And yeah. Why are we talking about 2020?
And then during the crash, you would have lowered the gate and driven the exotic cars out the back. Of course, that makes perfect sense, man.
I forgot about that part. I actually read this week in more 2012 news that that some folks were pursuing a sort of spin-off television show that would pick up where the movie left off to discuss civilization reconquering the Earth, basically.
Instead of Lost, they'd call it Found.
Floating. They'd call it Floating.
Floating.
They would call it Floating.
Oh,
or they'd call
Or
it would be like the new version of The Suite Life with Zach and Cody.
with Zach and Cody?
Have you seen The Suite Life?
No, I have not.
It's a great Disney Channel show. I fell in love with it one day when I was
That is
my
exactly why
replaced.
I haven't seen it. It's because it's on the Disney Channel.
It was marvelous, truly. It's these kids who live on a cruise ship.
Wow, that sounds tremendous, actually.
I've
lived on a cruise ship before.
Who doesn't want to live on a cruise ship? I've been on a cruise ship twice. 1.5 times, shall we call
Honestly,
it.
After day two, the food is already old because there's nothing new. Like, you can try everything in the buffet in a day and a half. And then
it's not even... Ugh. Yeah. I was let down, of course, for those of you who don't know. Al and I went on a cruise together with a few other gentlemen in December.
Not like that, people.
Not like that. Out of Miami. Though, if we could, remember the horror we had on our face when we swore we told them we had four people and we opened the door to our room and we're like, there are two twin beds in this bedroom.
There's like a heart-shaped bed in there and we have four dudes standing at the front. We're like, how is this going to work?
We're like, we are going to be spooning it up quite a bit for the next four nights.
Filios,
times all around.
You are on the balcony.
Until we found out that there was a pull-out bed and a chair conversion thingamajigger, so it worked out okay.
Amazing.
Oh, that cruise was good. This is a total side note. I will link everyone to a blog post I wrote about our cruise many months ago because we had one day in Cozumel, Mexico that was like the day to end all days.
It was pretty tremendous.
We are talking me wiping out on a scooter, flat tires and people almost dying. We were in some sort of Christmas parade in the city.
We got caught up in a Mexican parade. That was awesome.
On our scooters. And then later on at the
like shrimp fajitas on the beach. Just like as
it was
the sun
great.
Set. It was beautiful.
With mosquitoes. And then Al was he didn't try to be seduced, but a woman tried to seduce him as the evening went on.
What was the name of that dance club that we were sitting in?
What's it? I don't know what it's called, like the Millennium.
No, the Horizon. Was it the Horizon? Or something cheesy
like that.
And it had a dance floor of like 12 by 12. Oh, it was so funny. Oh, that was hilarious.
No, the best part of that was watching this chick who's totally trying to get up on you and seeing you try to deal with it. I mean, because myself and and Maddle.
Yeah.
We're sitting there in the corner just kind of not caring because you other guys were trying to get your groove on. And it was fun doing this commentary, just trying to watch the action from afar.
I remember distinctly like looking over at you guys. This girl is like getting her bumpity bump on. And I'm just like this weird, like, what do I do here?
This girl was effectively giving you a standing lap dance, or she was attempting to on the dance floor.
It was pretty intense. Well, and that brings up a whole other discussion of like the dating non-member stuff because I had a girl. There's this girlfriend of mine that we're chatting with right now, and she's obviously not a member of the church.
Obviously.
And she has like she asked me. She's like, "So would you ever date a non-member?" And I said, "Yeah, except I kind of know the discussion that is imminent in that relationship of like, all right, so I know what you're used to and where we're probably you think this is heading, but it's gonna stop about 2/3 of the way there, just FYI, and there's nothing that you could possibly do that would make it go any further. So sorry. Hope that works out for both of us." I mean, it's just like this completely different realm of dating and relationship stuff.
Totally, yeah.
And I had never been there, and here I am on this cruise, and this girl's
totally trying to buy drinks for one.
So funny.
The whole time.
Yeah,
get me a drink.
That's the worst approach with Mormon guys. Don't try and get them to buy you a drink.
And you're just—I mean, of course, the great irony. I don't want to say the great irony, but they were sort of professed evangelical Christians.
She had a tattoo of in Hebrew of "Jesus is my Lord" on her wrist. Which, first, the Jews wouldn't approve of that, and second. Well, you tattoo that on your wrist and then get your jiggity on. I don't know. I just found it counterintuitive.
Al, when you have accepted Jesus Christ as your personal savior, all is absolved. You just press on with life and just accept him and, go about your business.
And then you get this great fashionable Hebrew bracelet that you've tattooed to yourself.
Oh, brilliant times.
Beautiful.
That and then coupled with the other woman who was talking to us at the karaoke bar.
Oh.
When she found out we were Mormon, just left.
Yeah, it was so we're going around the table. She's like, "So where are you from?" I'm like, "From Missouri." And she's like, and points to Jeff, and Jeff's like, "California." And then our other guy was from Michigan. And then she gets the last guy, Maddle, and he's like, "Utah." And she was like, "Oh my gosh, wait, are you guys Mormon?" Like, just from the one guy, one out of four is from Utah,
and he's from Salt Lake of all places.
And I'm like, "Yeah." And then it was like we didn't exist. She rotates back in the chair after like 5 minutes of flirty chit chat. Rotates back in the chair. And then we got called up to be the Magicians Alliance Karaoke Club troupe.
And to cap off the cruise, I love this is Tales. I wish this cruise would have happened last week so it would be far more pertinent to now.
To a this weekend show.
And then the very end, remember I told you when we started the cruise that in the end of the cruise I wanted to somehow have a following on the boat?
Yes.
And at the end of the cruise, our last day, we are walking on the deck and this guy goes, "Hey, it's the Magicians Alliance." And we were like,
Jeff's heart swelled three sizes that day.
Oh, it was so good.
I think we've told this story before.
Yeah, we probably have.
It's such a great trip.
But we haven't told the crazy story of Cozumel and you being seduced and whatnot. So I will link to it because I think that blog post I wrote back then was pretty good at covering
all of
it.
That was one of your better posts, I will agree.
I enjoyed it. It's lengthy.
Comprehensive.
It was comprehensive, but it was more entertaining than, say, the really long one I wrote about Disneyland Paris, for example.
Which was more angry. I didn't understand that at all.
It was not angry.
Like, "Dear Paris, you frauds."
No, I talked about how much I loved it there, and I rated every ride I went on a scale, like a grading scale.
No, I noticed that, but they were all poorly rated.
No, they were not, and we will spare our listeners my reviews, but Big Thunder Mountain in Paris is so amazing.
All right.
Al hates Disneyland, by the way.
So good week, huh, Jeff? We got to wrap this bitch up, I guess. Good week?
Did you say wrap this B up?
Banter, this banter up.
You just said the B word.
If B word is banter, I certainly did.
On my life, you just swore, Aldone.
I've only sworn one time, actually. My entire life, once.
Make that two times.
Twice.
Well, you know what?
Three times, and I'm a lady.
The problem is I edit the show, so I'm going to go back and find this and... And what we're arguing right now. So at the end of the show, if I am correct, I will just replay you saying that.
Okay, done.
It's going to be great. Deal. I'm convinced I am right.
I make no mistakes, Jeff. I'm 100%
accuracy. One week it is douche drinks, and now Al is swearing. What is going on with all this?
Douche drinks was a... I so wish we could have named the episode that.
Oh, you're a crazy monkey. Anyway, let's go. I'll give an agenda this week. Why not?
Sure.
Because I assume we're both well. Oh, so that's all.
Except for my arm, still broken. Thank you for everybody who
your
donated.
Your arm is still broken.
Amazing.
And by the way...
Amazing.
Yes, everyone's donated a lot. Actually, I've realized there's a problem with our PayPal, and that's why we've had some problems. Anyway,
well,
that'll be fixed.
You just have to, what, make an account to donate? Is that right? You have to...
We will spare people the details. The point is, I believe a lot of people have told me that the current one requires them to make a PayPal account. We did not set it up properly to not require that. So that's something that's on my end on my to-do list. So we'll take care of that, though, people. Because people have actually told me they want to donate, and not even like $5. People want to give you like $20 or $25 a shot.
Dude, that'd be freaking huge. Huge.
It'd be awesome. So, folks, this week we have an exciting world. We have follow-up to some of last week's discussion about annoying buzzwords. Also, the Visitor Center, the Los Angeles Temple Visitor Center, I'm sorry, is finally reopened. They said it was a 2-year renovation, but I swear it's been like 4 years. I don't know.
You do the math. America decides.
Al has some great story about Mormon gardens, and I honestly don't even know what that
means.
No,
it's a news story that I want to attack.
I don't know. We might get a little... We should have just made a rant section again. What are we thinking? Maybe we need to reorganize until the end of the show, but I guess it's too late. So other than that, some interesting stuff about missionary work from one Gary Lawrence, who's a market researcher. And the Philadelphia Temple is getting a green light after its rather contentious battle to be constructed. And our good friend McKay Coppins. I'm going to let you guess which publication he is a writer.
Motimes.
I was going to let the listener guess without me actually saying it, but there it is.
Oh, I thought you wanted me to guess, because there's only us on the show.
He will discuss. You might remember a few weeks ago we talked about this new church push for PR in some different markets and this and that, and how this guy who they interviewed talked about how...
We'll talk about it then, Jeff. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it then.
Oh, and for starters, we have a great comedy bit.
This week I'm like,
set it up.
I'm sitting at home. I've been catching up. Since I broke the arm, I've been like drugged up half the time. And so my work schedule was thrown off. And so I had...
Sure.
Like, you take your Percocet and you wait an hour till you fall asleep. And then I have sleep for 2 hours. And then I wake up for 4 hours. Then I have productivity. But that 1 hour right after you take the drugs, I'm waiting to fall asleep. And so I've been watching Last Comic Standing as I've been falling asleep. And so this week I watched episode 9, which was 2 weeks ago, watching it. And they had Ron White on there it might have been the drugs. It might have been the hour of the morning that I was watching it. But I laughed out loud. I thought it was brilliant. And so we queued it up. We're going to go ahead and let you guys listen to this is Ron White on Last Comic Standing as a little bit he did on Mormons, which I love Mormon jokes. So anyway, Jeff, take it away.
I think comedy's about perseverance, about getting the job done no matter what. The show's got to go on. And about a month ago, I was in Las Vegas. And while I was in Vegas, I broke this tooth off at the gum line in an alcohol swimming pool related incident. I had a show to do in 4 hours. I was kind of drunk and missing a tooth. It looked a little unprofessional. Not to me, but to the fine folks at the Mirage who invited me out. I told them that. I said, I can't go on stage until we get this thing patched, because this tooth doesn't look that big till it's gone. It's about the size of a dinner plate. They found this all-night dental school, and this dentist is like 14 years old. He hooks me up to the gas, and I tell him I don't feel anything, and you need to turn this up. And he goes, there are regulations of the state of Nevada stating which. I'm like, oh, where'd you go to college? He goes, Brigham Young. Turn it up to Catholic. Here's the moral to that story. Never let a Mormon set your buzz level. They don't understand hammered the way you and I do. They're guessing, and they're bad guessers.
I just love like good natured ribbing towards our religion. I think it's hilarious.
I know, me too.
So that was a pleasant surprise. I was like, oh my gosh, Brigham Young, here we are.
And they're guessing, and they're bad guessers.
Because it's totally true. Like, I have no idea.
I wouldn't know.
Anyway, yeah. Hilarity. You're right. Hilarity.
Okay, hilarity. So, go. Talk. Go.
All right. Anyway, I am. We are going to follow up to our buzzwords of last week. If I can pull up my.
Yeah.
My story here.
Do your job. Yeah.
I hate you.
Do what you're paid to do.
Geoff. I hate you. Okay, so.
Why are you so incompetent?
So, our. We had this forwarded to us from a listener last week. Janelle, is that how I say it? I think I know
Janelle,
her.
Janelle, you know her.
Janelle. Yeah, I just can't put a face to it. But anyway, she forwarded us. There's a blog post written by old Eric Snyder where he made just kind of some funny observations. Where
just some follow-up love. Yeah,
yeah. He said, you know, he just gave some. He said, to share would mean, in Mormon, speak, would mean to make you listen to, or as in, I'd like to share a story. I'd like to make you listen to this. Special would mean any adjective with a positive connotation. Indicates the speaker has warm feelings but lacks the vocabulary to express them. It was a special experience. Brethren, pronounced brethren. Everyone here, including women.
Well, that one's kind of fair because the scriptures are similar in being masculine.
It's true. Struggling, as in brother so-and-so is struggling with some things right now, would mean you wouldn't believe how much porn brother so-and-so has downloaded. Young men's program equals the Boy Scouts of America.
That's the best one.
Less active equals not the least bit active. What do you got?
My favorite one is the next one right there. Go ahead and read it.
A Democrat obviously equals less active.
Less active. I love that one.
Word of wisdom equals smoking and drinking. Not very Christ-like equals I personally don't approve of that, and I'm sure Jesus doesn't either.
Yep.
Be tolerant. Pretend you don't hate gay people.
Yeah.
I am being tried and tested. I think God has it in for me. It's so true. Like, you don't realize kind of the nuances that work their way into kind of the Mormon dialogue until you until you're trying to have like a frank and honest discussion with somebody not of our faith, and you're trying to talk about gospel related stuff, and you find all these random things just creeping into the vocabulary, or when you're sitting there like during an incredibly long talk and you start noticing this stuff, kind of like non-fluencies in speech, right, where it's just like, wait a minute, that's not what he's saying at all. But great follow-up, Janelle.
Oh my gosh, Janelle,
that's what I said.
Yeah, it is sort of what you said.
And thanks for sending that over. Very funny. Good time.
And thanks for Eric Snyder. I've been checking out his website. Funny stuff. He does movie review. He calls it Snyder Remarks, which is one of his
because his last name is Snyder.
Snyder. So it's Snyder Remarks, film reviews, and general merriment. And I like the title of his film reviews, like The Expendables, which comes out this weekend. It's he just says in which elderly men commit murders. To summer. So there we go. Thank you, Eric Snyder, you beautiful man. Moving along, my good friends from Los Angeles, the Los Angeles Temple Visitors Center finally reopened after a lengthy, lengthy renovation, I believe, to bring it more up to snuff with sort of the decor and aesthetic of many a visitor center nowadays. L.A. was pretty old school style for a long time.
Way old school.
It pretty much looked the way it was built in the 1950s, so I can imagine there were some things to change. So it's a big deal now. It's going to be all tastefully decorated. The Christus statue is back.
They've removed all hints of yellow carpet.
I don't believe that for a second. They did add an extra room. Let's see, what they've got a statue of the resurrected Savior.
To this day, I've never been in a room the size of their what is that, the waiting room in there?
What are you talking about?
In the LA Temple?
Do you mean the chapel?
Yeah.
There's a separate chapel, which isn't officially a waiting room, but it's
No. Like the
chapel.
Place. Yeah, like, oh gosh, I'm trying to think of like, or maybe it's just the normal room, but it's just so massive.
Well, which, for the endowment sessions?
Yeah.
Those, yeah, the LA Temple has enormous endowment rooms.
Like five, 100 people plus.
I think they hold 400 people each.
It's enormous. It was so incredibly huge.
And there, and I love that the LA Temple was the last temple built to still have a progressive style endowment. It was built for live endowments.
Uh-huh.
But they quickly switched it over when they made the movie. So it was built for that. So even now it's cool because they still do the movie, but you actually go room progression like you would a live endowment session.
There's quite a few that do that.
Yeah, and a lot of them you move a little bit, but LA's one of the few ones I can think of where you actually go five rooms, just like you would for a live session. And it's cool, and it's all like it was. I always love doing sessions there.
It keeps you awake, man.
Yeah, well, even during the stuff, like during the initial parts, creation and this and that, little things like when the stars are created in the heavens, you look up and there are actually little diode lights in the ceiling that twinkle like stars and stuff. It's cool, man. It's Hollywood. Come on, what do you expect?
These people know what they're doing.
We have expectations here on the West Coast for these sorts of things. You can't just assume the spirit's going to be enough. We have to be entertained.
That's absolutely right. I hadn't even thought of that, but that's so funny. These guys are like, you don't bring me in here to build this shrine to our Lord and expect me not to put everything I've got right into it.
That's brilliant. I'm excited to go out there. I've wanted to, especially for little things, like the fact that I know they've redone stuff as far as the theater, so you can watch the Joseph Smith movie, which before was this little room with, like, the metal chairs you have in Sunday school.
I'd never watch a movie in that.
So it's, I look forward to this. I need to check it out. Field trip, I suppose. It'll be good.
All right, so
I like it.
Check
that,
this out.
That story. Yay.
It's been reported, of course, in the Deseret News, there's some Cotton City, New Mexico, that made a Mormon garden for the community, right? And so they're building this big old monstrous garden for the community, and it's going to be beautiful and amazing and awesome, and I'm sure it's going to be lovely. Now, here's my problem with that.
Okay.
I've been through this a number of times, right? It always sounds great. The communal garden. You think, of course, we'll do a ward garden. And then if everybody... So we're just going to come and we'll work 1 hour a week weeding. 1 hour a week. And then at the end, when we do the big harvest, everybody just gets it however much they need. And it's perfect. And it's going to work beautifully. Except that... No one shows up except for like four people. It's the total Little Red Hen scenario. And there is more anger, bitterness, and resentment that comes from ward or community gardens than any project I've ever been involved in my life. And I am not exaggerating. I am telling you, people in New Mexico, stay away from this. Avoid it like the plague. You need to get one guy that's going to garden this sucker. And then if people want to help, they can go and help. Because that's the only way it succeeds. If you try and do this communal where the Mormons are going to garden and they're going to donate, blah, 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 blah. It does not work. It will fail. You will hate each other. And babies will die. And that's what I'm saying. I've seen it myself.
And babies will die.
If you want dead babies, support these gardens. Otherwise, shun them like pornography.
Yeah.
How do you feel about them, Jeff?
I've never thought about it because we don't like have gardens in California. So.
No. Well, so like typically what happens is somebody will donate a parcel of land. Everybody comes together and they're like, this is awesome.
We don't have parcels of land to donate.
Oh, you need to live in the Midwest more or in the deserts of New Mexico.
Actually, you know what we did? You might remember this being discussed before.
The
we had
road
extra
show.
Land. We had extra land next to one of our buildings in the state, and we just built a baseball field. And I'm serious. Now there is a, and actually, right now as we speak, there is a ward activity going on for my ward, and they are watching Back to the Future.
And you'd be like, "Let the community come use the baseball field." That's a great gift to the community.
That's a great missionary tool, and I understand we are going to allow the community to use it, but of course, first and foremost, it is for our blessed state.
But the garden, I mean, it's better to go and buy a couple cases of green beans because that's more than you're going to get out of this thing anyway, and just hand them out to people. Just do that. Why don't you set up a little booth and hand out cans of green beans and mandarin oranges? They're 39 cents. Not a bad move. And people like them more than anything you'll grow in a crummy New Mexico garden. Amen.
Okay. I don't really understand.
I'm very passionate about this. I had many weeks as a 14-year-old that were wasted on this garden that no one else wanted to work on. And it's hard to weed that much, man. That's a lot of weeding.
Why are you so angry?
I just think it's a foolish idea.
You're so angry sometimes, Alan.
It's my rants. All right. Anyway.
Rants. Yeah, so everyone, communal gardens are totally stupid, and no one should use them ever.
That's what I'm saying. If you've had a different experience, I challenge you. Come leave a comment, and we will debate it our intense debate commenting engine.
Why do we? I love that we have the intense debate engine. Like, what? I still don't understand what it lets us do that regular old comments just don't let us do.
You can debate further.
How can you debate further with our
intense debate plugin? It links to levels. You can reply to replies to replies and then back to previous replies.
Oh, well, that's good. That's useful.
Yeah. It was a worthwhile upgrade.
I'd like to be able to tear it down like that. Oh, we have been we love upgrading the website, don't we? Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, folks, I'm really dumb with computers. Okay, I'm not really dumb. But Al was showing me how to do some things for like an hour. We should have been done recording the show like an hour and a half ago. But yeah.
Instead, it's almost midnight on a Saturday night.
You have been teaching me important life lessons.
I will not give you fish, Jeff. I will only teach.
No, you know, you put there, you put in some, you get a bone, you put in some vegetables, you got a stew, baby.
That's what I'm talking about.
Got a stew. So, are you sure you're done talking about communal gardens? You're okay?
Yep, done.
Does this remind you of collectivization in some way? Are there Ukrainian ghosts in the mix here?
No, it's just such a what do you call it? The Zion people thing that we all try and do, where we have pure hearts and we're trying to be one people. You know, like Jesus said for us to be.
He's a good guy.
That's what really gets me. What really gets me going.
I forgot. What is what's the Ukrainian word for the famine?
For the famine?
Stalin, you know, the Stalin famine in Ukraine.
Oh, for that event? I don't remember.
If I find this before. Holodomor. Right?
Holodomor? No.
Holodomor. I think I'm correct.
Holodnia is like a hunger.
Oh, and speaking of Ukraine, friends, just so you know, our dear Al will not be joining us next week on the show.
Dude, check this trip out. Temple Open House on the 20th. So Friday, this next Friday, I'm at the open house. Then I go from Kyiv to Rivne to Kremenets.
You're going to Rivne again?
Of course. Then I'm going to Ivano. We're spending a couple days in Ivano from Kyiv.
Did you ever serve in Ivano?
No, but I love it. I've been there. Well, I went there for like.
There's nothing there other than the fact that it's close to like Yaremsha and the Carpathians.
It's a great it's a great kind of pristine city, and there's a bunch of Selo type towns that we're just gonna kind of rock and walk through on the way out, and then we're going down to Odessa just to be on the port for a while, and then shoot back up to on the 29th we're back in Kyiv for the dedication. And then 2 days later, we get to actually go and do some temple work on the 31st.
And then?
Then I fly home.
What did you fly back?
I fly back on Thursday.
That means nothing to me, but okay.
Well, the second of September.
I did say what day and not what date, so technically you
Pardon me, the second of September.
No, it is my fault.
No, Jeff, please.
I asked what day, and you gave me the day. This is totally my bad. I will take ownership for this. It's fine.
Hurry up. Shulala. I kill you.
Oh, shush. We're fine. Honestly, like it's we're blazing through material. We spent like 16 minutes talking about comedy bits and cruises, and we're halfway through the whatever. So
we got Mormon news to get through.
We do have Mormon news. Good stuff here. Perceptions. This is a sort of combined thing that I found here from Times and Seasons, which is a great LDS-related blog. I want to give them a shout-out. As well as the Deseret News. And both of them cover the same event at the FAIR conference, which is FAIR is the Farmers Against Irrigation Retardation. I don't remember what it was. It's the conference about Mormon apologists. You know,
it's
FAIR.
Not Farmers Against Irrigation Repression.
Retardation, I said.
Oh, retardation. No, that's not it at all.
It's Mormon apologist stuff. I remember what it. Anyway, they have the conference for it in Sandy.
Foundation for like agreeable
international relations. Sure.
Now I gotta look it up.
Oh, remember we talked about the FAIR conference a few weeks ago because of that guy that was going to unravel the mystery of what was the Book of Lehi or something like that at the FAIR conference.
Oh no! The Book of Abraham. Foundation for apologetic information and research.
There it is. There it is. We need to follow up and see if that man really revealed his special secrets about that.
If the Book of Abraham is finally laid to rest.
Anyway, moving on. There were remarks by a man named Gary Lawrence. Side note, Gary Lawrence is a market research specialist, and he's also a personal friend of my family, so I'm excited to read this article. And we can give a shout-out to his daughter, Kristen, who is awesome and the best.
I hear great things. Is she single?
She is, actually, my friend. And she's like 5'9", so...
Perfect.
And she specializes in playing Halloween music.
Oh, never mind. I'm over her.
I will link to her and her awesome Halloween. I'll just say her second album is called A Broom with a View. You get what I'm working with here?
I feel it. I feel it.
You feel it too. So anyway, we've talked about this sort of a bit in the past about the point of view or the direction we need to take missionary work and the general outlook of the church, whether we need to be, you know, one with the team and this whole idea of, you know, we're in the big Christian tent right now, or if it's better for us to note our differences. We've sort of talked about that. And that seems to be a sort of divisive issue within scholarly research in the church. The point is, Gary Lawrence presented research that he had done. He's actually published a book on this, and I don't remember the name of it, but I have a copy of it lying around somewhere in my house that presents all of this research that he's done, straight up just pulling in market research about perceptions people have of the church. And he found out that 5 times as many Americans have a strongly unfavorable view of Mormons as those who have a strongly favorable view of us. And about 3/4 of those polled are unsure whether Mormons believe the Bible or are even Christians. There's a lot of stuff here. Now, it goes on. I love the stuff this guy points out.
That's a tough stat, man.
That's a really tough stat. It's right there. 67% are uncertain whether Mormons believe the Bible. 77% on whether Mormons are Christians, and 75% don't know whether Mormons practice polygamy.
You know what's funny about that, though? It's like when we share a verse from the Bible, typically it's immediately followed up with like a verse from the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of noticed that, and it would be easy to be confused about the overall feeling towards the Bible, that kind of thing. Yeah. I think just in the way that we typically use it. You know, where it's like, there's this verse, and then
it's almost like
we
trump it. Yeah, it's kind of like we trump it with the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, so like, I don't know, if I was somebody observing, it would be easy to think, oh, well, they tolerate the Bible, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I get what you mean, and I see that. At the same time, there have been times in the past when you really read a lot of books by LDS folks and this and that, mission stories, what have you, when they try to focus on many of these common ground things that we have of faith and this and that missionary work, and then they find it's ineffective until we actually stand up and testify of the power of the Book of Mormon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I think it's great that we make the point of the Eighth Article of Faith, that we believe the Bible, you know, to be the Word of God as far as it is translated correctly. We also believe the Book of Mormon to be the Word of God.
I learned a different song.
Did Janis Kap Perry write those songs? Because it's great because they follow.
No, the one I know is we believe the Bible to be the Word of God.
We believe that the first principles and ordinances of the gospel are
that
first.
That sounds like Janis Kap Perry.
Lord
it's
Jesus
not
Christ.
Catchy enough.
This best one. Second. Repentance, third, baptism by immersion for the remission of sins.
Elton Perry came to our mission
for the gift of the Holy Ghost. Bum bum. Anyway,
Elton Perry came to our mission and asked. He was like, "Who here knows the Articles of Faith?" And I stood up and I could only sing them. I was like, "Ah, this is close as I got."
You just don't know them. That's what matters.
That's right. I got my 13 scoops of ice cream.
The point is, we need to make a point of using the Book of Mormon, obviously. I think it's good that we use both, but I could get why, you know, I don't think we need to be like, hey, let's just use the Bible a lot so people know who we are and get us and this and that. So Gary Lawrence, from everything I read, is a strong believer that we need to make the point of stressing our differences. This is a great quote. He says right here, "We've been doing missionary work for 180 years. I'd say the delivery vehicles are arriving, but the freight isn't being offloaded, and that's our fault." Pretty good metaphor there, I think, isn't it? We got missionaries everywhere, but how well are we actually delivering the product and the message of the church, what it actually is?
Well, even with missionaries, right? They get people to church. How well are we actually, like, how well are we fellowshipping or teaching our gospel doctrine class or gospel principle classes and that kind of stuff?
Uh-huh.
Like, how well do we actually represent ourselves when given the opportunity? Yeah. Here's another chunk of that I love. It's a paragraph a few down. I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but the politics one.
In the same, is this from the Times and Seasons article?
Yeah, or he says, "Finally, I'm tempted to say the church should get out of politics, but I don't want this to be a Prop 8 discussion. General requests to support particular ballot measures are not the problem. It was drawing local leadership and membership into fundraising and canvassing that made conservative politics into a semi-official part of the gospel at the local level. Which, that was the same thing that, like, I know you and I, we both kind of struggled with a little bit, where it was like, it just felt a little bit weird that they were kind of going to that, or kind of people were responding in that way.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, I'm not sure if it was the church that asked for that or if it was how people interpreted it. But anyway, he says the neutrality statement needs to be reiterated and enforced. Local leaders who have disciplined members for making left-leaning political statements should be released with a vote of thanks and replaced. Harry Reid should be an invited speaker at the next general conference with the assigned topic, why I'm proud to be a Mormon and a Democrat.
Yeah, I don't agree with that last part. But...
Me neither, but I do think there needs to be a greater appreciation for ulterior political views than what we personally share, especially in the Mormon church, because I've heard comments like, I don't know how you could be a Mormon and a Democrat. It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, well, you know, there's everybody has their reasons, right? Everybody leans one way or the other for a reason. And, you know, I'm sure that just because you're a Democrat doesn't particularly mean that, you know, it doesn't define your stance on abortion or on, maybe even gay rights or whatever it is. Like, your political leaning is bigger than a single issue. And so while you may disagree with your party on particular issues, the overarching mm-hmm. umbrella is what tries to capture you in. And people don't generally appreciate that.
Which... No, they don't. And I worry a lot that we have this lemming mentality in the church. And in some areas more than others. It definitely depends on... socioeconomic stuff and all this and that, but
sure, yeah.
But I definitely agree. I mean, there's this lemming mentality, and we shouldn't be afraid of members who have opposing political views that have nothing to do with their actual devotion to the church and the gospel, because they don't have to be related. Some things might overlap,
It doesn't make them less active.
No. just to cap this off, I like here in the Deseret News article. This is an interesting suggestion. He suggested that church members replace the traditional three-step paradigm of conversion, which is, you know, find, teach, and baptize. He says, with a more realistic six-step model. So tell me what you think of this. Awareness, awakening, curiosity, interest, investigation, and conversion.
Oh, that's probably more accurate, I think.
I think it's really interesting because that is very related to what we did a lot in my ward before I went away to grad school when I was the ward mission leader. I'm not taking credit for this. This was the bishop's idea, but not a six-step model, but thinking about this, the whole idea that we had for missionary work, and it's still active in my ward officially, but it's not really stressed. You probably remember this though, because you were there during the heyday of it, was bring a friend. This was this big thing that was said, bring a friend, bring a friend. It was almost just like bringing as many people as we can, and the ones who are going to stick, basically. And the idea wasn't to bring a friend, and of course, to use traditional missionary methods, of course, and, you know, invite people as we should, but to bring people just to a church event, just to be friends with people, so they have an awareness. Little by little, if they become tighter with everybody, they have that awakening, perhaps. They become more curious, their interest peaks, and eventually they investigate and are baptized. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, the only place I've ever found success missionary-wise is in, like, you know, kind of more of an attempt to educate and remove misunderstandings and animosity.
Yeah.
You know, so like, well, I mean, I'm talking not as a missionary, right? And so at work and stuff, I mean, I don't go out trying to convert people. I go out to kind of make it known that I'm a Mormon and maybe offer to fill in any gaps people may have in their understanding, or, you know, just kind of be very open about it and have those discussions. And that's really like, I honestly feel like that's kind of all, like, the best route I could take on it. It's just, you know, let me offer and invite people, and because people like to be involved in social activities just because it's church related. I mean, I go with other religious groups all the time that are doing interesting activities or doing something fun in the community. I have no trouble with it, and so I have no trouble inviting other people to my things. And our job isn't to make people interested in the gospel. Our job is to kind of open the door so that people that are looking to kind of fill that religious void, or you know, they're in the Old Testament, it talks all the time about how people are seeking, you know, they're seeking to find Christ and to find God. And that's, you know, we're just facilitating that seeking. We're not trying to spark it, right?
I guess that's a good point. And building on that, you see right here in the same thing, he said he encourages, I don't entirely agree, but less overt emphasis on proselytization, and how, you know, how it's very much shifted from the primary responsibility being the mission president, missionaries, and blah, 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 and how it goes to local leadership. Now, I firmly believe it should go to every, you know, to the whole idea that every member is a missionary, that we need to work as a ward body to do it. But I get the criticism that for the wards that actually do it, you know, talking about discussions and baptisms and all these things are such emphasis in a ward that he makes the point right here saying that, where'd it go right here? That he says Mormons need to gear it down a bit, or we're in danger of becoming like that uncle or brother-in-law who is selling MLM vitamins or fruit juice or term life insurance.
Like, here
the
comes.
The person you don't want to talk to because you know where the conversation will turn. And I guess that's the risk we have. We need to be, you know, adamant about our testimonies and sharing the gospel with people. But I firmly believe there are plenty of people who are worried about that associating with a Mormon will mean that, you know, we are going to try to convert them. Is the classic expression.
Right.
And I fully understand that. We need to be more casual. And no, I don't want to say more casual, but, you know, let our examples shine through, share our testimonies. But like you said, we can't always light a spark with everybody, but we need to be the ones who facilitate a conversion experience for those who have that spark. And some people get the spark when they don't realize it. You know, you and I have both been on missions. We've seen people get an interest when they didn't think they had one.
Yep.
Starting
out,
or
like a life event happens that kind of leads them to it. But
you're
right.
But you know what I mean. I mean, of course, no statement can cover every single random little area and facet of missionary work or of retention. It's impossible. But there are, I think, worthy ideas, you know, to propose. The fact that we need to make the point of our differences. So one last remark on this. I like that he talks about people, you know, say that we don't believe the Bible. His statement is, of course we believe the Bible. Our members wrote it. And he says, if that strikes you as being from the Orrin Porter Rockwell School of Diplomacy, you can simply say, quote, we claim to be the followers of the same religion as those who wrote the Bible, which is a very good point. How often do we say, of course, we believe the Bible. We are the same church that Christ organized. Hello.
Right. Yeah, you remember Paul? Yeah, we think he was a
remember
Mormon.
Paul? He is Mormon, basically. So there you go.
No, this Gary Lawrence. Well done. Good.
Well
good
done,
points.
Gary Lawrence. And Gary Lawrence is a great guy.
So,
and I
some
might
good
add,
insights.
Has it, and I might add, if I may, has a wonderful house. So if you ever
be sure to get his daughter's hot new CD from the
Broom with a View.
A Broom with a View.
It's a play on the movie A Room with a View.
No, yeah, I got it.
Okay, I'm making sure you understand because, you know, we love movies and entertainment out here so much.
Ah, that's what I hear. Okay, so real quick, just to follow up on the Philly Temple.
Please do.
I wanted to kind of fill in a couple of the gaps real quick as to why the drama is going on out there. The church has been working with a group trying to get this piece of land right on the highway of, between 17th and Vine. That doesn't mean anything to
somewhere
me.
Somewhere in Philadelphia.
It's a major highway. So sure. As they're prone to do, they put it right on the highway where it's very visible. And so in 2008, they had a plot of land and then they had to go find another one because the ground was polluted. So then they find a guy, this party Klein, that acquired a tract of land in '87 for $3.5 million, and now it's the one that the church is going after. And so right as the church showed interest in it, the RDA came in and said that they were going to seize the land because he'd taken too long to develop it. So then they sued Klein to get the land, and then the RDA offers to drop its lawsuit if they get 25% of the sale price that the LDS Church paid for it, which is $7.5 million. So then this guy balks, and they're going back and forth, which is pretty much what the holdup has been, not to mention the petitions. Like, the petitions and all that jibber-jabber got taken care of earlier on where they're, you know, essentially the zoning stuff got taken care of. But the holdup was in these guys balking over how they were going to divvy it up. So in the end, Klein offered $100,000 to the city to cover administration costs, and then they settled with this RDA.
What a hassle, man.
Yeah, pretty dramatic, and I'm not sure if it was like a malicious kind of move on the RDA's part to try and stop the church from going in there, but anyway, yada.
It's going to be a big temple too, man. 68,000 square feet, that's sizable.
Yeah.
We don't build them that big as much nowadays. That's pretty big.
No, it's definitely not going to be a little one. Well, and Philadelphia is a great place to have it. Like, the church is pretty big in Philadelphia. I've been there a couple of times. And
yeah,
I'm
I've wondered about that because I don't even think of Philly, especially if they've had problems building the temple.
Well, you talk to any missionary there, and they say it's growing like hand over fist. Right?
Well, yeah, my cousin actually recently returned from his mission in Philadelphia. He loved it. He had great stories. Apparently, Wilmington, Delaware, is a very bad place.
No, of course you can have great stories come from a city like that. That's awesome.
Like, they had their local drug dealer, you know, and stuff like that.
So Jeff, tell me about McKay Poppins. Tell me how you feel.
I hate him.
About McKay Poppins.
How many articles from... First off, did you say Poppins?
Oh, Coppins, I'm sorry.
Poppins?
Poppins?
Poppins? Poppins? You say Poppins? Well, McKay Poppins has these remarkable abilities to both jump into chalk drawings and create staircases out of chimney smoke.
I love that it's from the headline that we begin this hatred. From the headline.
What do you mean from the headline?
He'll lead out with, and like, oh, you immediately know it's going to be full of garbage.
Sometimes he raises valid points, and the sad thing is, okay, if you will, this is always from the Mormon Times, and I feel bad because I almost always read the first paragraph or something, but it's like the only way to really drive the point home. So he says, it is a truism of modern media that few subjects draw more attention than politics. If you're a savvy journalist or blogger looking to attract page views in today's 24-hour news cycle, the shortcut to success requires slapping some political analysis onto whatever story you're covering.
Analysis is in quotes.
Yes, and then he says, like so, quote, university releases groundbreaking cancer study. What does it mean for Obama? That would never be a headline. That would never be a headline ever. Mr. Poppins, Coppins.
Except for on Mormon Times, Coppins.
Ever. Anyway, I don't. First off, I disagree with the idea that putting political anything makes it attract a lot of people. For one, a lot of people are turned off by politics. No, if you were to write, "University releases groundbreaking cancer study, and Lady Gaga loves it," that's what'll get people to read your story.
I know, I read it.
See, you would. Anyway, going on, he talks about some of the stuff we talked about the other week. Al cut me off earlier, and he was correct in doing so when I was explaining the story in the overview. Talking about whether or not this new church PR campaign in some markets is really a conspiracy to elect Mitt Romney.
I think he lifted this from us. I bet Coppins is just he's one of our faithful listeners. So first, thank you for listening, Coppins.
Should we file a plagiarism suit?
And second, man, you got to at least give us some little credit here. Say, This Week in Mormons was the one that led me to this idea.
Yes.
We demand it.
I love
it. An apology?
Anyway, this is all I'm going to get on for. He talks about this, and he talks about how, of course, obviously, we're not trying to elect Mitt Romney and blah, 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 which is fine, and that's true, and I'm glad he's defending that, which is reality, so I guess I should be grateful. But what I'm not grateful for is his partisan hackery throughout this little deal. Because he goes out of his way to sort of just mention the word liberal or Democrat in a sort of a pejorative sense. You see? How is that objective journalism about whether or not we want to elect Mitt Romney? It's only a few instances, but he bothers to go out of his way. Like, if you're a page view hungry journalist, he says on liberal website salon.com. Which argues that Mormons are just trying to convince Americans that Mormons are normal, but won't they consider voting for Mitt or blah, blah, blah. Why the unnecessary liberal? All he's talking about is that people want to make politics and drama out of any story to get page views. How does this support his original statement by bothering to mention the alleged political orientation of salon.com? But then it gets better, because he does say, of course, this is ludicrous that we're trying to push for Mitt Romney's election, and I do believe that is ludicrous. That's fine. But he says, even if you believe the Church of Jesus Christ is sinister enough to claim political neutrality and secretly coordinate PR efforts with a potential presidential candidate, how would those actions benefit Mormonism? He says, as I've written before, a Romney presidency would open up the church to unrelenting attacks from the left.
And the most left likely the left is opposed to the church.
And most likely alienate potential converts who happen to be Democrats. If Romney governed like a true social conservative, the church might gain favor among the Republican base. Right. So this man has never taken a political science class in his life, apparently. So this is what I don't like. For one, we're alienating people on the left or whatever, unrelenting attacks from the left. I think his mind is blurred because of all the heat from Prop 8. Because by and large, sure, people hate us on all sides, but I don't believe that leftists... I think leftists more like nothing the church than hate the church. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Compare that to people on the right who are social conservatives, who spend their Sabbath learning about why we are Mormons are going to hell. But no, no, no. If Romney's elected, it's going to hurt our chances with Democrats. No, we're not going to get heat from the Jerry Falwell contingent that loathes us to the very core. And he does say he doubts he'll see a bunch of evangelicals suddenly endorsing LDS doctrine. But that's all he says, when in all reality, the evangelicals are the ones that kept Mitt Romney from getting the president's the nomination for 2008.
It was a dirty Huckabee move, man.
Well, it wasn't dirty. I mean, it's politics. You know.
No, dude, it was dirty. I was there. I think we talked about this. I was at the Iowa caucus. I was up there campaigning with. I did a day with all of them. But like, yeah, it was so dirty. Oh,
anyway,
it was so disgusting.
So Mr. Coppins, I call you out, sir, for not understanding anything about the way the political system of our country works. What are you, Canadian or something? What is this?
Actually,
anyway. It's not the end of the world. What?
What can you do?
What can you do? It's not the end of the world, but that is the lamest thing ever that the Romney presidency would open up the church up to unrelenting attacks from the left.
He has the best closing line of all time, though.
Oh, the closing line's terrible. I was going to get to that, but thank you. You go ahead with it, please.
This may not make for a sexy political story, says Coppins, but it has the advantage of being true.
Yay.
What a schmuck. Ugh. Schmuck.
Yeah, so McKay Coppins, I don't. You're, yeah.
To you, we give a fig.
Yeah, I mean, he debunks that. Oh, he is a journalism major at BYU, so he's not even done with school.
Well, he seems like a happy fellow. Pleasant.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, he does believe that only Muslims should decide whether to build the Ground Zero Mosque, so at least he's okay with that. There we go.
All right.
That's another story for another time, my friends. Once again, a show that we swore when we started would be 35 minutes long has become longer than we had planned. But
our apologies.
No, it's fine. We'll edit it down.
No, we won't.
We'll NPR this sucker and cut out content to tantalize you into subscribing for the full version or what have you.
Nope, not going to happen.
All right, fine. Anyway, that's going to be it. Al, we will not see you for 2 weeks, my friend.
Off I go.
But we look forward to 2 weeks from now, Al will join us live from Ukraine. We hope.
I will be wearing full Ukrainian regalia.
We hope. And please drink some yogurt out of a bag for me, if you know.
I will. A little Zhivchik will happen.
Sure. Get me some of that. Buy some of that delicious juice.
I'll broadcast live from the Domashnaya Kuchnia.
Yes, you will visit the Echo by Valia's house.
Absolutely.
That was like our neighborhood, man. Good times. So, Al, good to you. Safe travels, my friend.
Thanks. I'll take this arm and see how it does on a plane.
Yeah, there you go. Those of us in the TWIM team, we'll miss you. And by those of us, I mean me. The two of us that do this.
All right. Thanks a lot,
that's
Jeff.
All. Thanks, buddy. And once again, everybody, please, of course, always find us at facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. Twitter, the real TWIM. That's what we're at. And any other associated things. And especially, of course, thisweekinmormons.com, which you're all used to. But please go there, interact with us, and get on Al's case for swearing in the beginning of the show. And I promise you right now, you're going to hear it. And that's that. All right. Peace out, everybody. This has been another This Week in Mormons. Sayonara, friends. I'm pretentious, and I think I speak Japanese. Bye-bye.
We got to wrap this bitch.
What is the matter with these people?